on to the show. It's a show.
How you say that?
It's gonna be a show, I guess, Brett.
I'm sorry. I typically have to wait for my intro, but you're not. That's not how words do. Hello, everyone, to the show. Hello, welcome to the show. Hello, everyone.
We've had a morning, everyone. We've had 2020 in the last 90 minutes. Nobody needs to know this, and I doubt it's gonna interest anyone, but we had this whole new thing set up. Everything new and shiny and advanced, and it's too much. Like, our ambitions, our appetite was bigger than our stomach. So I'm now looking into the crystal clear, stunning built-in webcam on my couple years old iMac. Hey, everybody.
Just to underscore all of that, John, just so you know, like, my room, this room that I'm in, over there are three iMacs just stacked up. Because right before this all happened, I robbed a truck called TYT. Right before this all happened, I'd had the same iMac for 12 years. No, for like 8 years, it was a 2012 iMac. And it died. And the only thing that worked was the monitor. So I bought a new iMac because I felt fancy. And I had them both ready on my desk. And then coronavirus happened. So I had to replace them. And those went over there. And then I had to go to the studio and get my computer. So I have three computers on the old coffee table.
You can make Mega Desk Computer Edition.
It's not worth it, John. None of it's
worth it. No, it's probably not worth it.
I love the audience. And literally, the audience and my wife are the only two things keeping me going. Sort of my wife, but mostly the audience. Thank you. Without you, I die of not trending.
Yeah.
It's over for me. I hate it.
You're like a weird digital Tinkerbell. I've always said you're like a weird digital Tinkerbell. Somebody's like, GoFundMe for new iMac for Dragon Daddy. No. This is a stop. No, we're gonna get it right. Everything's gonna work.
The worst part, everything broke. YouTube broke.
We don't even know why.
John's predicament is he is surrounded by the materials needed. Like, that's what makes it worse, I think.
It's a lot of complex stuff, and people who work here are asked to just like meld everything together. No, I'm surrounded by cameras. There's cameras everywhere. I'm sitting on a camera, but right now it's iMac. And so what we're gonna do is we're gonna give you the iMac webcam of political morning shows today. So we're gonna be talking about the last day of the RNC. We're gonna be talking about Nancy Pelosi, Jim Gaffigan. We generally try to mash those two things together. And we're also, of course, going to be giving you our garbage people of the week. The first one, since I moved back into this abandoned and apparently falling apart studio. So that should be a lot of fun. We also have your community garbage person of the week. So that should be fun. Brett, should we do this thing?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay, well, I'm gonna do it. Feel free to weigh in. If you start
maybe throughout the show, I'll start to feel something. And if that happens, oh, you'll know.
Okay, I'm gonna try to stimulate a feeling in you and in the audience. And if I do, please hit the like button, share the stream so that people can gaze upon the sort of washed over image of me and Brett's crystal clear video that he's getting from my camera.
Thanks to John. I also just want someone to clip out, I will stimulate a feeling in you.
Oh no. Okay, you know what? We're only a sixth of the way through the entire show. So why don't we do this thing? So all this week we've had the RNC, and it was all building to last night, where Donald Trump was going to take to the stage and accept the nomination of the Republican Party, which he did, although not without a little bit of a stumble.
My fellow Americans, tonight, with a heart full of gratitude and boundless optimism, I profoundly accept this nomination for President of the United States.
So really fast, before we get to the substance of this, which way was he being weird or stupid or bumbling there? Did he mean to say proudly, or does he think profoundly works in that context?
he's an idiot and I've stopped with it all. It's so funny. I don't know. I want to give a hat tip to the folks over at The Daily Show who put together this this mashup of Trump essentially saying that and all these people at Fox News saying that, oh, it's such a huge accomplishment for Trump, for Biden to be able to read off a prompter. Oh, wow, fancy that. Any idiot can read off a prompter. And then they went through and pulled all the times that Trump, the idiot, could not read off a prompter.
Yeah, that was great. We thought about playing some of it, but we can only do so much Daily Show. What was it? It was 10, was it 20 times where he could not read a word off the prompter, which is fine, I guess. But they just got done attacking Biden for properly reading off of a prompter, but they don't mind him. And I don't know, I don't care, I guess, if he's bumbling and all of that, but they're still going with Biden is falling apart. Like, I feel like you should at least be fair about that. Anyway, his speech, I'm not gonna lie to you, I checked out on it. Like 15 minutes in, 20 minutes in, I turned to my wife and I said, let's take our dogs for a walk. I can't take this anymore. And so we went out on a nice walk in the LA night. And we had a nice long walk. And when we came back, he was still talking and he wasn't close to being done. And so it was very long. It was very boring. And that's not just me saying that. Even that night on Fox, some were echoing the same sort of thoughts.
Well, there certainly were impressive fireworks on the Mall, but I have to say I was surprised at the lack of fireworks in the president's speech tonight. First of all, it was far too long, 70 minutes exactly. And I thought at times it felt more like a State of the Union speech, like a campaign speech. But I have to say, in his delivery, again, I thought the president, who we have seen really turn on a crowd, was surprisingly flat and it didn't seem to have the bite that he usually does have in his speech.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the thing is, if you have to choose between a whole bunch of crazy lies and fear mongering and racism and all of that versus him being boring, I guess hypothetically I prefer the boring. But the thing is, he was doing all of that lying. He was saying insane things, but he was saying it in this tone of voice, which I guess is, that's him trying to seem presidential or have gravitas, that you speak at this cadence.
But the outdoor audience, it was so creepy. Like, we've all been to weddings that we have to go to, but we don't want to be there. We'd rather be home.
Ouch.
It's a destination wedding at like John's. And then I don't remember your wedding at all.
It was good.
I do remember it. Sorry, I have a terrible memory for events. Now I remember it. It was nice. Whatever. Thanks for the invite.
You spoke at it, you monster.
I did. I was having trouble. It was a really great venue. Let's talk about your wedding more, John. Let's have
just go back to Trump.
I was talking about Trump, and you're like, my wedding, I'm in love. Idiot. Okay, so looking out at the audience throughout that, first thing we all think is like, wear a mask, you morons.
Oh, but we're gonna get to that, don't worry.
Right, but second, like, all of Trump made that speech because he wanted it to look impressive and he wanted to essentially do something that violates the Hatch Act. That violates norms, that violates essentially the rule saying that you can't use the backdrop of the White House. It was designed to give you home field advantage. You should probably, and everyone should do it at the convention. But it just felt empty. He didn't, I mean, all the people, it was like these obligatory clapping moments. And everyone else just, when they went out and showed the crowd, it looked like they just wanted to go home.
Yeah, there were. I mean, they did clap sometimes, and there were standing ovations. Like, I think it's fair to say the biggest applause line, both for him and for Ivanka, was moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. Like, that seemed like the biggest genuine applause line that they had.
It is Church of Trump. It is Tower of Babel. That's it. Mm-hmm. Because look, it's just like church. You go there, they use this building to make it look impressive. You have to stand every so often, then you have to sit back down. This guy who is trying to appeal to evangelicals has turned himself into the Pope of the Catholic Church of Trump.
Yeah. It was odd how restrained he was, how restrained the audience was with Ivanka. And Ivanka gave, like, I guess a more reasonable speech. I mean, she lied constantly, but what she really, I guess Republicans will like it, but she built in so many pauses for applause, and she would get that like couple second delayed reluctant applause. And I'm like, this is your God's daughter.
Yeah.
Show a little respect beyond that thing. If you're gonna polite clap, do it politely.
I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. Like, did they mic the audience right? Is the audience ready for that? Like, it's that moment of clapping. It's like when you watch like The Office and then you go back to watching multicam sitcoms, you're like, oh, this is just an awkward fake experience. Yeah. We've been watching the single cam, that's what it's called, single cam version of this sitcom. And then they went back to like, you know, filmed before a live studio audience. And if you looked at Wilbert Ross, a barely live studio audience.
You pointed out that he has the home field advantage. You're obviously not supposed to use the White House for this. And I'm sure that if Biden ends up doing it because the norm has been shattered, Fox is going to go back to hating it. And I guess they will in some sense be right, but it's going to be a little bit hypocritical. Anyway, I want to show you. That was sort of the beginning of his speech, was that he profoundly does whatever, and he's very profound of himself. But let's go to the end of the speech.
Pictures from the South Lawn, and now the fireworks on the National Mall. A first in our history, a political convention on the South Lawn of the White House, the People's House. Thousands of cheering supporters on this pandemic summer night in mid-August watched as Donald Trump, among other things, formally accepted his party's renomination during a long speech on this night, his name spelled out in fireworks. The president talked up our mortality rate tonight, though in truth, over 3,500 Americans have died just during these 4 days.
That was pretty good for Fox, I think.
That wasn't Fox, that was Brian Williams.
Oh, you're right, okay.
That was MSNBC. And you know how I know it's Brian Williams? Because everything he's saying is like this. When wife conceived Marnie from Girls, he said, I'm close. It's about to happen. I'm gonna take a nap.
I'm gonna leave. Anyway, you're right. Okay, I gave too much credit. I guess Chris Wallace being willing to criticize his energy led me to believe that they were being very critical. But no, he's not supposed to be doing it. You're not supposed to be sitting on the White House lawn for a political speech and then watching the fireworks on the National Mall. And who paid for the fireworks? Probably us. We'll probably never know. You're not supposed to have events like that, which we'll get to. So anyway, the entire thing is messed up. But acknowledging that, you know, more people died during the pandemic, during the RNC then died on 9/11. That should put it in context. But America, while not immune to the virus, is definitely immune to context at this point.
It's so inappropriate that while he's spelling his name out in fireworks, behind the other fireworks, the conventional ones are the exact same shape and look as the coronavirus.
Exactly.
Like every firework just was like, Coronavirus, perfect sphere with little spikes. That is that is the virus over DC.
That is true. Okay, so I do wanna return to one point though, because maybe this is just me nitpicking, maybe this is me misreading that he's trying to go for that tone thing, or this is a different Trump, he's mixing it up, he's being presidential. I don't know. But while the things he was saying were crazy, the way he was delivering them, I don't get the people, including sometimes Cenk, who I disagree with on this, that think that he sort of doesn't want to win or whatever. But when you see a video like last night, he just doesn't really seem to care too much. And so the recount put together a great mashup of bits of his speech in 2020 and his speech in 2016. They were doing it to show that he was saying the same things, which is true. He was saying basically the same lines. But I want to show you just a bit of their video. You can go watch the full thing on Twitter. That's not what I want you to focus on. I want you to focus on the comparison between how he delivers each set of lines.
Protect free speech for all Americans. Protect free speech on college campuses. I am your voice.
I am fighting for you.
We will make America safe again.
We will make America safer.
We will make America proud again.
We will make America prouder.
And we will make America great again.
And we will make America greater than ever before.
God bless you and good night. I love you.
I love you all. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you very much.
It honestly seemed less like a comparison of Trump versus Trump, and like if what if Kimberly Guilfoyle gave the speech versus Trump. So there's a huge difference. Am I overreading this in my mind? Is it just, you know, the context of being outside?
No, he's obviously performing differently. Maybe it's because he's out of practice, because he hasn't been in front of a big audience in a while. But you'd think it would make him excited. But usually when you're in a big venue like that, they pump the air conditioning, especially because your performance is better when you're cold, period. And
is that true?
Comedy audiences will laugh more. Comedy performers will be funnier when it's cold. When it's and all performances, you make it cold. If it's warm, they get tired and they fall asleep.
Interesting. It definitely seemed like a massive difference in energy. And I guess, look, to be fair, I hated the earlier stuff because he seemed like a raving maniac. So I guess I should prefer this. The issue is that the tone is a little bit different. The energy is a little bit different. I don't mean tone as in a sort of like zoomed out view of what he's saying. I mean, literally like his tone of voice is different, but he was saying the same crazy things. He was demonizing protest movements and stuff like that. So it was different. I'm not sure it was that much better.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
In terms of what Donald Trump actually said last night, normally what we would do in a situation like this is we'd go through all of the fact checks and everything. But one, I just don't have it in me right now. Two, I don't know that it actually matters. And three, Daniel Dale on CNN pretty much did the job for us. So here is just a little portion of his rapid fire fact checking of Donald Trump's speech last night.
He said he will always, and Republicans will always, strongly protect people with pre-existing conditions. That pledge has already been broken. He and they have repeatedly tried to weaken those protections in Obamacare. He claimed again that he banned travel from China and Europe. No, he imposed partial restrictions with many exemptions. Tens of thousands of people continue traveling over. He boasted about the COVID testing system and about his general response. Look, experts near universally say the US was fatally slow in its response, especially slow in setting up adequate testing. He said that he ended what he called a NAFTA nightmare, and he signed a brand new US-Mexico-Canada agreement, the USMCA. That agreement preserves, maintains most of NAFTA. He boasted about building about 300 miles of border wall. What he didn't say is that most of that is replacement barrier. As of August 7th, according to official data, just 5 miles had been built where none existed before. He suggested that Joe Biden would confiscate guns. That's baseless. Biden is running on a non-mandatory buyback of so-called assault weapons. He said Democrats want to defund the police. Biden, again, doesn't, has rejected that. He denounced Biden for voting for the Iraq war. Biden did indeed vote for the Iraq war, but what Trump doesn't mention is that he also supported that invasion. He said Democrats twice removed the word God from the Pledge of Allegiance at their convention. Two individual caucus meetings outside the main primetime programming did leave it out, but it was uttered in every primetime event. Trump denounced so-called cancel culture as like an insidious left-wing thing. He, Donald J. Trump, has tried to get dozens dozens of people and entities canceled, fired, boycotted, including literally last week, Goodyear.
Yeah, and I mean, that was less than half of the thing that he went through. And it's obviously all true. And it's just so much that you just have to like let it wash over you, take a sip from your drink, Anderson Cooper style, and realize that for the audience that speech was for, they don't care.
So the takeaways from the convention are these: one, lower ratings than the DNC. For all Trump's bragging about how great his ratings were, not as many people watched it. So he failed at that. Two, the lying. So Daniel Dale does an amazing job of doing something for literally 3 minutes. At the end, he just went for like a minute and a half straight because it was nonstop. And three, it's incoherent. None of the attacks work together. That's something that's being overlooked. They say that America's safer under Donald Trump, but that it's less safe under Donald Trump. And every argument that they're making doesn't make any sense. They're saying that, you know, the Democrats want to let everyone out of jail, but Donald Trump proudly did prison reform, which let everyone out of jail. Like, is it? It doesn't make any sense. And it is our job to call them out for that. And it is your job as a voter to not let him get away with it.
What I don't, you're 100% right. And virtually every topic you could point to, that's sort of what's going on, is that they want to have it both ways. And I know Emma made a great point about this, about criminal justice reform and Joe Biden last night on the coverage, where like you could totally attack both Biden and Kamala Harris for having a history of the sorts of actions that would make the people who are protesting in the streets really hesitant to get behind them and question whether they would actually do anything if they got into office. The issue is that Donald Trump doesn't actually want to connect all those dots, because he doesn't want to seem supportive of the protest movements, because he's not. So he'll point out some of the things that they did while simultaneously saying that, but they do actually support the protest movement, and they'll defund the police and all of that, but you shouldn't vote for him because he voted for the crime bill. It's just so confusing. And in a more meta sense, that whole convention was the pandemic's gone. We don't have to think about it. And look at the great job growth, ignoring, of course, that we still haven't recovered like a third of the jobs that were lost during the pandemic. So it's ignoring huge portions of what's going on, and then hyper focusing on one portion of what's going on, which are the protests and all of that, but saying it doesn't matter that it's me who's president right now. Somehow that's Biden's fault.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people right now who do polling and all that, they're like, this is potentially a great line of attack for Donald Trump. I guess. But how does it make any sense? He's president and this is happening, and it's been happening for months and months. It's a crisis that, like many other crises of his presidency, he has done nothing to improve, and in fact has made the situation far worse in real time.
So yes, is the short answer to what you said. However, messaging Dems suck, and messaging Trump's a marketer. And so the policy doesn't play as it's being presented by Democrats. They're just not doing it. And an argument that you made for, and what it would take to make that argument against Trump or against Biden and Harris, as you suggest they could potentially do, is much more complicated than saying Joe Biden is a radical left wacko. And they just want to say that and say that and say that. And one thing that's been reinforced as the media landscape has changed, as Republicans have solidified their hold on their base through Fox and massive orchestrated social media campaigns and funded right-wing extremist blogospheres, for lack of a better term, they can say things until they're true. And the way that it's filtered as a default setting for mainstream media is to present that argument at least as half of the two arguments, even though they're wildly untrue and utterly incoherent. And then what the Democrats need to do is find a way to message as concisely and effectively as Trump. Luckily, all the facts are on their side. Trump is unresponsive and doesn't take responsibility. He did not, and 180,000 people are dead. That is 90,000 Ebolas. That is 45,000 Benghazis. 45,000 Benghazis. Along the way, he was late on masks. He said we're doing too much testing. Those are things to cover up for him. But worse, let's look at his record. Let's look at Dr. Donald's medical record. His medical record is not just that, but it's disinfectant. It's ultraviolet light under your skin. It's, we really need to amplify the voice of the demon semen doctor.
Yeah.
He is terrible at all of this. And what evidence can I point to? 180,000 people, Americans, are dead. And did this happen everywhere else in the world? No, this just happened here. You look at the EU per capita, it's like an eighth the infections that we have. It's way fewer deaths. He failed. Yeah. And if he was in charge of Team America on an episode of The Apprentice, Donald Trump would be absolutely fired.
Yeah.
So let's 100%. Do that. We gotta fire him.
Yeah. And then they need to do the right messaging if we're gonna get to that. We are gonna launch back into a little bit of the speech, not of the speech itself, but of the situation in which it took place. A lot of people had a problem with it.
The fact that there were 2,000 people in close quarters on the South Lawn there with no, seemingly very few of them with masks, no social distancing, ignoring all of the public health recommendations. I suspect that's going to get a lot of comment in the next few days.
And it should, because it wasn't just that he gave a speech at the White House, it's that he had a crowd there. And I remember when Melania spoke and they had the crowd of what looked like 100 to 130 people or so. Doing that coverage with Ben Dixon, I said, Trump's definitely going to want a crowd. Do you think they're going to get like 200 people, 250 people? I never would have imagined that they would pack literally thousands of people into extremely close quarters with very few masks. A few, I was looking and I did see a few, but the vast, vast majority not wearing masks. Now we're going to have more on this, including the White House explanation for this. But Brett, did you predict a crowd of 2,000?
No, I didn't. I mean, I don't know how big the South Lawn is. I thought he might give this speech from a pulpit in the White House. But someone was probably like, you might want to stay off of that because that's where Obama announced that he killed bin Laden. You might not want to do that. But yeah, I had no idea that they'd bring that many people in. I know. But now I can imagine what that process was like. Things like, yeah, where do we do it? And then on the back, him looking out and saying, we need 1,500 people. But it's not just that. It's he turned America into 1780s France. Because the monarch on his way out has invited the nobility to the castle. He turned the White House, it's the people's house. It's supposed to be the people's house. He turned it into Trump's house. He turned it into a castle and invited the nobility in. And if all you need to see is the people walking out of District 1, looking at all the folks that have to play in the Hunger Games to know that this is insane and there is no way in hell it should be allowed. But
exactly,
and this isn't America, what he has done. It is not America. It is
and Fox and
it
Friends.
Is pre-revolution France.
Yeah. Except a little bit more death culty. Like the reason the title the title of the video is called "He Force Feeds Kool-Aid" is that he brought them in, knowing that anyone who's invited, if you want to be taken seriously as a Republican, you're going to want to go, even though you're going to be sitting next to Marjorie Tyler Greene or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you wear a mask, you're going to be mocked and heckled and questioned. Your loyalty is going to be questioned. And so they have to go and they have to pack in there and they're not going to be safe. But to show their loyalty to their God Emperor, they got to do it. They got to risk their life. They got to potentially be the next Herman Cain. That's 2,000 people. That is a third the size of the Tulsa crowd, perhaps more tightly packed in. And there might be more coronavirus floating around in America than there was back then. And so they potentially could get sick. In 2000, if there is coronavirus spreading there, there will be hospitalizations. And even if only 1%, if there's a 1% fatality rate or something like that, that'll be deaths potentially. And so Jim Acosta talked to the White House and said, why in this situation would you do this? And here's the explanation that they gave.
We not only heard a lot of gaslighting tonight, we possibly saw and witnessed some super spreading from this event. And I talked to a senior White House official earlier this evening about all of these people, hundreds of people sitting side by side in the audience, not wearing masks. And the senior White House official brushed off these concerns about the lack of social distancing at the president's speech tonight, saying, quote, and get this quote might blow you away. Everybody is going to catch this thing eventually. That those are the words coming from a senior White House official about the concerns being raised about this being a possible super spreader event tonight. It reminds me of what a White House task force, coronavirus task force, told me one time about the president's grasp of this pandemic. He simply doesn't get it.
Yeah. So you're worried that people might get it. Oh, so no, our explanation is everyone's going to get it, literally everyone. So when I say and have said that they've given up, it is like the official position. No, yeah. Just everybody's going to get it. And really fast, how many times have I criticized him for his just let it wash over us thing? Let's do the herd immunity, even though now he says that other people wanted to do herd, to go herd, not him. No, they're going herd. That was a herd of Republicans that you just saw. And they said, yeah, of course they're going to get coronavirus. And of course they're going to be more Herman Cain's. That is the plan at this point.
Right.
Look at that massive crowd of people risking their life.
Yeah, it's so stupid and they're all old. And then the herd immunity, the herd is a great term for it, because then the White House gates that they walk through to get in there are like the Temple Grandin system to guide cattle to the slaughter. Like that is what we just experienced. And it's about leadership and it's about taking responsibility. Trump was unresponsive and he is irresponsible. And that is absolutely it. He was unresponsive and we need to hold him responsible for his failures.
I agree. I just want to show one more clip because a lot of people were responding in real time to the fact that they decided to, they didn't even test people. How could you not test people? They have unlimited 30-minute tests on hand if they want it. And they just aren't doing it. They're choosing not to. It's madness. But here is Dr. Sanjay Gupta as we were finding out about this.
Well, you know what I thought of, and I've just been covering this for so many months now, is that the history books will be written about this chapter in our lives at some point, and it will show events like that and say that in the middle of a pandemic, at a time when the country decided to shut down, when there were 5,000 roughly people were infected, and at a time when there were more than 5 million infected, we started having events like that again. I mean, it's really frustrating. It's mind-boggling, and I think it shows that there's certain segments of the population still have not learned or are not paying attention to what this virus is. That's a real problem. There will be people who became infected as a result of that event last night, and there'll be people who will spread it and possibly require hospitalization, may even die. You don't want this virus, okay? The more that we're learning about it, even in people who have minimal symptoms, there's a percentage of people who become long haulers. They have symptoms for months afterwards, and maybe it becomes something that they live with. We don't know.
Yeah, I was just reading recently about some sort of weird cognitive issues that are cropping up like seemingly months after some people have been infected. It's still causing problems, let alone all the problems of your other internal organs that we've already known. But no, it's just, hey, whatever, you know, this is the Kool-Aid. You drink it, maybe you have heart problems for the rest of your life. Just drink it, just chug it down, everybody's got to.
Well, it's an admission of failure. He admitted it, that's it. Done, finished. Everyone else fought against it. All the smart people fought against it. Everybody else who wanted to do something because they cared about human lives fought against it. And other countries won, man, and we lost. Why? Because of Trump's actions, straight up. 180,000 people are dead, and he is not trying to win anymore. And like this weird, terrible fact of the matter of living in Trump's America is he convinces people to give up. Like he convinces people to stop fighting because he's such a bratty loser baby. Yeah. And that's it. Think about it. We need to take these moments where we like open the door and walk outside and of our little bubbles, and the light blinds us because, and I compared it to a fart smell. We're just in the room with the fart smell for so long, we stop smelling it. But we need to step outside, come back in, and breathe and go, oh my God, he failed us so miserably that he just keeps farting. And now we're like at that part where we just kind of accept it. No, we need to take him out and bring a whole bunch of air freshener back in that place till it goes away.
Exactly. Take him out in the metaphor of the fart room. Yes. Jim Gaffigan has long been one of my favorite comedians. His Netflix shows I've watched 1,000 times each. But generally his comedy is not, it's not Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock. It's not highly political, tapped into what's going on socially. It's awesome observations about food and commercials and travel and stuff like that. But that ended last night. He apparently reached his limit and he began a tweet storm. I'm only gonna read you a few, but there's many. And I'm gonna try not to swear because these were littered with F-bombs. Hopefully they've all been censored. Let's find out together. Trump derangement syndrome is part of the con. Wake up. You know Fox News is biased and full of loons. It's how they gaslight and silence criticism. Do you think any of those congressional Republicans really believe in Trump? Or do they fear him and don't wanna end up like Flake? Please don't buy that socialist crap either. Obviously, that's okay, you can say that, yeah. Obviously Obama wasn't a socialist. This is all lies to scare you and you know it. Biden is not radical, are you serious? Heading to bed, but remember, if you wanna sound crazy, please tell me about the deep state. To sound stupid, please be against cancel culture, but then accuse anyone with an opinion of virtue signaling. Trump derangement syndrome is meant to distract from the con of Don. I don't give an F if anyone thinks this is virtue signaling or whatever. We need to wake up. We need to call Trump the con man and thief that he is. And there was a lot more, but I like finally seeing people push to the point where they have to say something. And he was pretty far away from political commentary, at least in his standup. I liked it. I know he's getting criticized this morning, but I love it.
Yeah. What do you think? I love Jim Gaffigan. And there's things people do know about Jim Gaffigan. It's not just that he is apolitical. It's that Jim Gaffigan is also religious. Like, he's a religious guy. He's a man of faith. He is a Catholic. He definitely brings that into the content that he's created. I mean, he is like the whole, in terms of his popularity, he is like the wholesome comedian who made it huge. And that's what I like about Jim Gaffigan. He's the hot pocket. Like his joke
and the voice.
He's like, I don't even like, I've just been starting to go to the supermarket and throw avocados away there.
That's good.
It's just not worth bringing it home to throw it away later.
That's a great point, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot about food.
Yeah, and just from a comedian's perspective, like the way that Jim Gaffigan tells his jokes is very slow. It's like little bits where he's just a little funny here, a little funny there, and just like gets you off balance. It is not like a rant-based comedian.
No.
It's not like that. It's not just observational, but like it's not like Dennis Leary where it's like, can you believe these jelly donuts? Like it is, you know.
Yeah.
I just, you know, avocados, hot pockets. And his way of, he typically like summarizes for you as an aside what the audience is probably thinking, like, oh, he's lost it now. But he does that voice that way. It is the opposite of what you see here. So when Jim Gaffigan, the typically reserved comedian, comes out and does stuff like this, I mean, it is a huge moment. For him, and he's a very popular comedian.
Yeah, no, he totally is, and definitely watch his specials if you haven't already. I honestly do love them. I like a lot of different types of comedians, but I have legit listened to everything he has on Netflix at least 7-8 times, all of them, over and over. I don't even care. I'll keep listening to them. He's very good. And by the way, he's been on TYT before. He was interviewed by Cenk Uygur. So you know, feel free to tweet him to come on TDR. That'd be pretty cool. I love him. We can talk about politics. He like a lot of his tweets were trying to get through to Trump voters. Like, you know, he lies constantly and you don't care. And he talks about how he says, I know you hate snobs and elites. I get it. But look at Ivana and that D-bag Jared. You think they're on your side? Do you think they've ever done a real day's work in their lives? Wake up. These are just true. Like you say that you hate cancel culture. Trump tries to cancel everyone. You say you hate the elites. You pick the biggest elite. And like these are things that obviously we've talked about over the years, but I like seeing more and more people being vocal about it. And I know it's a different topic, but when all, like the NBA and all those other leagues were starting to do their boycotts and everything, yesterday on the coverage of it, I pointed out a tweet by The Rock where The Rock is delaying something. And he was talking about the shooting of Jacob Blake because and the reason it stood out to me is because The Rock never talks about this stuff. He doesn't delve into politics literally at all. He's very brand safe and everything. And maybe this is just two data points that are totally unrelated and they're not indicative of anything. But I like to imagine that maybe more and more people over time are being forced to acknowledge how crazy things have become. And if Trump does get reelected, I don't know what we do to limit the damage, but hopefully we'll be doing it together.
The skill of the politician is to be able to win the votes of the populace and then not have to admit that what they want is what they need. And what they're feeling should actually be reflected in the behavior and like legislative ends of the politician. Yeah. And that translates to just general topics and public opinion. Like, the Republicans want you to think that things like the NBA strike is unpopular, that athletes protesting is unpopular, that Nike standing up just for the general idea that there is some systemic racism, there is some form of systemic racism in America, and embracing a concept like Black Lives Matter. They want you to believe that that's insane. But a poll came out today saying that 2/3 of Americans, by a 2-to-1 ratio, Americans are in favor of the strike professional basketball.
Like, yeah, you're 100% right.
And Nike made those decisions because they think that it's popular, because it is absolutely popular. And all the Republicans have going for them is Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz, who's a pollster, who essentially a focus grouper, who's like, what can I say over and over again to convince people that the truth isn't true? Yeah. And that this little feeling that, and it's not even like a feeling, it's putting these two words together feels like that portrays an issue, a topic, an America, when really it does not. It is just focus grouped and artificial and takes advantage of essentially people's heuristics.
Yeah, it's this weird coming together of a person who is, for whatever other faults he has, and it's a long list, is good at gaslighting people, and an ever increasing percentage of the population that is like, just give me the tube. I just want to suck on this gas. Just give me as much gas as you can possibly. Like, they desperately want to be lied to. Mm-hmm. Anyway, good job, Jim Gaffigan. Right. Everyone, please get him on the show.
I get it. I get that you're doing something rhetorical, but like, it's not. They want to feel right. They want to feel superior.
That's
everybody
what I mean.
Does.
Yeah.
But it's not that. Willingness
don't go out to
wanting to be lied to. Everyone would prefer that the thing they're told, they already believe that they're the best. They also want to feel right. And they just need someone to confirm that in a way that they don't reject. And that's that sweet spot right there is how the Republicans operate.
Nancy Pelosi, not a huge fan of the upcoming debates. I get it. I doubt many people are anticipating them, but her view of it is a little bit different and what she wants to be done. Here's a little bit of her talking with reporters.
Don't tell anybody I told you this, especially don't tell Joe Biden. I don't think that there should be any debates. I do not think that the president of the United States has comported himself in a way that anybody should, and that has any association with truth, evidence, data, and facts. I wouldn't legitimize a conversation with him, nor a debate in terms of the presidency of the United States. Now, I know that the Biden campaign thinks in a different way about this, but I thought what he did in the 2016 was disgraceful, stalking Hillary Clinton like that.
Yeah, so look, the debates were weird back in 2016, but you gotta have debates, right? You can't, and I don't even like, we would hate it if they were saying the debates should be canceled. We hate it when people being primary don't have debates. So I feel like we should be consistent on this, right, Brett?
So in politics, if you're leading, you don't want to debate anyone, because debates give your challenger more opportunities to present themselves in a positive way relative to you. You don't want to give him that real estate. So that is an overarching strategy, tale as old as time. That moment where Nancy Pelosi takes the lectern and essentially says, between you and me, she's prepared this burn. That is a place for an awesome burn. That was not an awesome burn. I think if you if you kind of brought in what Trump just did with Biden saying, I want to challenge you to a drug test leading into it, and said, listen, I challenge you not to lie for a week. If you don't lie for a week, I'll debate you every time you don't lie for a week. We'll have one a week, but leading up to it, you, your daughter, your surrogates, they can't lie for 1 week. Here's a list of your lies from the convention, and then play things like Trump, against all odds, brought the North Koreans to the table. They always wanted to meet with us. All the things that Daniel Dale listed, all the lies, like Joe Biden wants to defund the police, straight up lie, like explicitly a lie. Go through all of it. The tax cuts put tens of thousands of dollars in middle income income families' pockets. No, they didn't.
Veterans Choice.
He signed the Veterans Choice Act. More money was put in people's pockets during the Obama administration than was put in as a result of this epic tax cut. So we'll do debates, but embracing that kind of messaging that Nancy was flailing to figure out, which was like, listen, he's going to bastardize the conversation. No, prove to me that you can tell the truth for 1 week and I'll debate you.
Yeah, I kind of like asking him not to lie at all. Is one thing, but just like, okay, we've compiled a list of your 20 most common lies. Just don't tell these particular lies.
No. Because then you write your own ads. Since whenever he lies, you just clip it out and you play it. Like, since we issued this challenge to Donald Trump, it doesn't even need to be Biden. It doesn't have to survive or to go around the debates. It's like Trump challenge. Don't lie for 1 week. Try it on. Just try it on. And then the Midas Project, Rebellion Pack, everyone can then just use it and cut those ads. So let's start it. Dragon Squad Assemble, the Trump challenge, 1 week without lying. Someone come up with a better hashtag, and by the end of the show, we'll figure it out. And then after that, we'll put together an ad that says, you know, since we issued this challenge, unfortunately, Trump has lied. And here they are. Yeah.
That's good. I like it. The debates are going to happen, though. Regardless of what she said. And I think that Biden's actually, I think he's going to eventually hear that she said that. She did her best efforts. But anyway, it turns out there was a camera in the room. Biden and Trump are set to face off during three debates, with the first scheduled for September 29th at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. So we are 1 month away from the first debate. Asked about these debates, Joe Biden said, I will be a fact checker on the floor while I am debating him. I think everybody knows this man has a somewhat pathological tendency not to tell the truth. I'm used to dealing with bullies. Look, I think that the debates are going to be a debacle. I think that they could actually be a disaster, but they should happen. I don't know about my confidence that Joe Biden is going to serve as a great in real time fact checker for him. I just don't know. There's so much. He lies so much, so fast, so insanely. Honestly, if Trump sits on that debate stage and just tells the sorts of lies that we were going through, I would be shocked if that was where he capped out on the crazy meter. I think it is going to be literally just saying conspiracy theories about Joe Biden, insulting Joe Biden like crazily to his face. I think that stalking behind Hillary Clinton is going to seem relatively hands off compared to what he's going to do with Biden, especially if he's still down 7 or 8 or 9 points going into that debate.
So yeah,
it's gonna be, we're gonna do coverage.
That's it.
I'm going to be drinking.
Trump's going to go negative, 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 because going negative polarizes and shrinks the electorate. And the fewer people that show up, the more of a chance that Trump has of winning, period. And JR was kind of saying this in the morning meeting today, and I agree with it, that by the time November rolls around, people are going to be like, you know, there is going to be a high likelihood that this messaging of everybody's going to get it anyway, let's go herd, gets out there. or the numbers will be down. And everyone just needs to go vote. Everybody just needs to go vote, figure out a way to do it. But the downside is while the USPS has dismantled the apparatus for mail-in voting, which is a response to the coronavirus, like he's trying to shut that down. Mail-in voting will go up, they tamp that down. But as a result of coronavirus, they're getting rid of all the ways that people can vote in person. So both of these options are gone. And if you don't want to, if you want to go around the mail-in voting situation that's turned into a debacle, you're going to have to go and vote in person. But that'll take even longer than it normally does on a regular election day. And I want to say a big shout out to LeBron James, who's trying to get poll workers staffed. He launched a nonprofit so he could staff poll workers so that there can actually be people to work these polls.
Yeah, and I saw part of the negotiations that went on to end the strike in the NBA was they're going to be turning the stadiums into places people can go vote. I don't know how quickly they can turn that around, but that's the idea anyway. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so I've got the actual garbage person garbage can. I'm gonna start decorating it soon. It feels good to not have my actual trash from my desk constantly on display on the show. This one's just got people's pictures. And I was looking back, I think one of the last people we put in here was actually Tucker Carlson. So he still belongs in there, so I'm gonna put him back. But anyway, there was a lot of garbage this week. There really was. And there were some really horrible people that obviously are terrible. But garbage people tends to focus on certain sorts of behavior. And so for my entry this week, I want to cut right to a video that became a narrative following the speeches last night. Take a look at this video of Rand Paul.
We have Rand Paul here in downtown Washington, D.C., just getting out of the Republican event at the White House with Trump accepting the nomination for the Republican Party for the 2020 election. He is surrounded by a crowd of protesters here, as well as this line of Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police.
Okay, so that's a video. At some point, he starts trying to leave. And look, there's a crowd around him. There's people taking pictures. People are shouting, you know, incendiary, crazy things like stop killing us and, you know, say Breonna Taylor's name and stuff like that. One of the cops gets pushed at some point, except that that's not why he's a garbage person. He's a garbage person because ever since that happened last night, up to and including this morning on Fox and Friends, he has been repeatedly saying that he was nearly killed. That those cops stopped the protesters from ripping him apart with their bare hands. They've got protest signs. They don't want to die. Like, by the way, I love that once he's out of that area, he's finally wearing a mask again. He can take it seriously because Trump's not around. They're just saying like, hey, take this seriously. Stop killing us, things like that. And he has turned it into these insane rioters would have killed me if they weren't stopped at the last moment. And so for that reason, if we can come back to me, Rand Paul is this week's garbage person for me. Thoughts?
Well, I drew my garbage person. You see who it is, John?
What? That's pretty good.
Same garbage person, Randall Ayn Rand Paul.
That's a good drawing of Rand Paul, actually.
Thank you very much.
Tell me why he's garbage.
This is a paid actor, staged protester, Rand Paul. What are you doing? Where are you? Why are you there? In what world is Rand Paul walking through the streets outside the White House?
Yeah.
For any reason other than to get this photo op? Now, there was a different moment where Rand Paul feels like he was under attack. That's because a police officer shoved a protester who shoved the police officer back. And Rand's like, oh my God, Rand Paul can't even keep the peace with his neighbors. And he thinks, and he's trying to be the authority on what we should do in America to keep the peace abroad. Rand Paul is a liar. Rand Paul says, Donald Trump wants to get out of the Middle East, just like you could have gotten out of Yemen. There's an option.
Yeah.
Trump vetoed getting out of Yemen. Vetoed. Rand Paul was for that. Rand Paul is for getting on, but I got count out my prayer daddy. And I wonder what Ron Paul is thinking through all of this.
My God.
What is
That's
Ron,
a great question.
What's your dad think about this, Rand? He's got to just, because I don't think that Ron Paul is going to say, that's okay. I'll abandon my principles, wacky though they be. Like Rand Paul has tried. He's tried to straddle that divide and he's going to bang his nuts on the asphalt when he falls off. Like that's the problem. Like
Rand that's Paul, good.
All of that. And what just happened? It's like I said it earlier in the show, they turned the White House into a castle and they invited the princes and princesses to that castle. And what they're trying to do is turn all of the decent Americans into monsters and animals. That's what they want to portray mm-hmm. people as. If you look at that, most of the people were saying, just say her name. Why? Where's Rand Paul from? They're not just shouting Breonna Taylor at some rando. Kentucky. Mm-hmm. He's the Kentucky senator. He is responsible for that. And his argument here is I should never have to face the people. I should never have to. Why should I do that? What?
Well, he will for a photo. Hell?
He's doing it for a photo op. There is no other reason than to get that. Now, there's plenty of people standing outside of the White House as folks. There's one guy like flipped off an old lady. Like got in her face and did that. Like, obviously I'm against that. Obviously I'm against all of that. And I think that there's so many people guilty of this one thing, of taking a small group of folks within an organization, within a movement, or just in the same physical space and saying they represent everyone. And a lot of people do. Like there's the ACAB movement, all cops. No, they're not. There are good cops. I love good cops. I believe there are good cops. I know good cops. And I love them so much. I support good cops so much that I want to rebuild the concept of policing around good cops. And I think that's the kind of messaging that America needs to do. And I think that's what like the Joe Biden campaign needs to do is say, I love good, there are good cops. And I want to listen to good cops and give good cops what they need to succeed. But all this messaging goes to nothing. And it just allows people like Rand Paul to be like, oh my gosh, there's a person near me saying that I should do a better job.
Yeah. I hadn't actually really thought about it because I assumed at some point they have to leave. That's pretty good. Yeah, no, you know, people pointed out I didn't crumple it. He's just like put like nice and gently. No, he's actual garbage. He's got to go in the garbage. We don't reuse these pictures because they're unreusable. Yeah, we're 2,000 people just walking out of the gate of the White House back to their cars. That seems unlikely.
They did it on purpose. That's what.
Yeah.
There's no
and nothing happened to him.
And nothing happened.
Nothing happened to him. Anyway, and you know what? Things are happening to other people. It's not actually about Rand Paul. He wants to make it about him. But no, the people who, you know, a right-wing militia member, gang member, whatever, were shooting in Kenosha, they didn't just get pushed or heckled, okay? Jacob Blake didn't get pushed 7 times in the back by a cop. This isn't about him and his BS attempts to make himself out to be the victim. And he literally is going on the media repeatedly saying that he was nearly killed. Unfortunately, there was video. Not that it matters, Fox isn't going to show it. Anyway, we have overlapped on our garbage person, which almost never happens. Almost never.
I don't think it's ever happened. Maybe it's
happened. Really interesting. Yeah, it had to be him. But anyway, that was after most of the votes for the TDR community garbage person came in. So with 18,000 votes, the community has voted for right-wing media for defending the Kenosha killer. Got 74% of the vote this week. So right-wing media, particularly Tucker Carlson, I'm assuming, absolute garbage for explaining that he effectively had to do it. The 17-year-old had to illegally get a gun, drive across state lines, and murder a few people. I don't want to get myself totally back into that headspace. We talked about it a lot on the show yesterday and the day before, but they're defending people who are trying to hunt us down and kill us. And we're supposed to, like, it's a civil society that we have. We're supposed to be just talking about the facts or something. They support people hunting us down the streets and killing us. They made excuses for the guy sending pipe bombs to newsrooms. It never ends. Anyway, coming in second, the RNC for not even bothering to choose a platform got 12%. That's funny. Kimberly Guilfoyle for hurting everyone's ears got 8% of the vote. And Jerry Falwell Jr. for being a massive hypocrite got 6% of the vote. That is this week's garbage people.
I do want to say that we ask and you shall receive. Here is some, I don't know if we can see it.
I can't. What is it?
Oh, God. Hang on, give me a second. It's some fan art. Oh God, I hate wife. I don't know how to use your phone.
Did you just throw her phone?
I tried to change it. Mine goes down from up from the bottom. Oh, from down the top.
Send it to us. We'll tweet it out.
Okay, no, we'll get it. It'll be. I'm just gotta turn down the intensity.
Oh, who did that so fast?
I don't know. I'm afraid to touch the phone again.
She was a Tinkerbell.
Osborne.
Osborne,
just a black and white drawing. And that's me in my TYT hat.
I like it. Now, everyone in the audience, that can be your nightmare tonight. Okay, Brett, thank you as always for joining us. I'm going to be joining you later on today on Common Room. So everyone should definitely check that out on Twitch. You got a happy half hour this week?
Happy half hour this week. Phil Iskov, the creator of Sleepy Hollow on Fox. And writer on that Chicago Fire show canceled. So it's my wife.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, thanks.
Because Phil can eat it.
Okay. Well, Phil. I will talk to you later on. Thank you, Brett.
Bye.
Joining us once again on the show today, candidate in Texas's 31st district, Donna Imem. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much, John. Really good to be back.
It's good to have you back, and it's been a pretty big couple of months. The last time you were on the show back in, I think it was around the middle of June, you were facing your runoff, which would, and that has since happened, and you succeeded. So congratulations on the result there.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Like I said, you know, no one believed we would be here, but in this entire primary process, we beat out 11 other candidates, and in the runoff, we beat our runoff opponent, not just by a little bit, 13 points, okay? So the district has made it very clear, and the cool part is, in the runoff, we had 257% turnout. Not 5%, not 10%, 257% turnout. July 14th, right in the middle of this pandemic, when unfortunately cases in Texas were the worst, but people came out to vote.
Wow, yeah, that is obviously awesome. You know, one of the conversations we've been having with a lot of candidates during this entire pandemic is how it's affecting their race, and obviously it makes it more difficult to do certain things. But I wonder, you know, the last time we talked was a few months ago. We've since gone through another big spike in cases, including, as you pointed out, in your state. As of right now, as you're going into the home stretch, just a few more months until you'll go up against John Carter, who's held the office for getting towards two decades now. The way that it's been handled, the way that a lot of these big national issues have been handled, is that still having an effect on the way your race is running right now?
Absolutely. I mean, look at Texas, right? We had a shutdown for 4 to 6 weeks, depending on which, you know, county you are in. Yet during that time, our leadership, our GOP governor, didn't take advantage at all to do the right things and open up in the right way. First of all, when they opened up, they didn't require masks anywhere. They left it up to small businesses to police masks, okay? So then we had a huge spike in hospitalizations. You saw, you know, hospitals in Houston be maxed out of ICU capacity. And then, you know, 4 to 6 weeks later, when the death rate was going high, we exceeded 10,000 deaths. They decided now they were going to say masks are going to be required in Texas. And within 2 to 3 weeks of, you know, masks being required, we now see hospitalizations go down 20%. Look, the science has been telling us from day one that if everybody wears masks, if you have 90% plus masks, you handle these challenges, the pandemic, in a way that it really impacts people's lives, where people are not ending up in the hospital. But these guys decided, despite all of the evidence, all of the science, all of the physicians telling them what to do, that they were going to just leave it up to other people to do what they wanted. And we have thousands of deaths in Texas that did not have to happen. I remind you guys that we have over 170,000 families that have had to put on a funeral in the middle of this pandemic. Just imagine if you were one of those.
Exactly, yeah. And unfortunately, it's very close to home. It seems like we just went through the RNC. And if there was talk about the pandemic, it was in the past tense that we've moved past this. And so they are trying to get people to limit the damage that's being done to Donald Trump, the damage that's being done to potentially incumbents like John Carter, to imagine that we've moved past all of this. The pandemic's done. But then there's this alternate reality, which I call reality, which is that it's still killing more than 1,000 people a day. People still need economic assistance that is being blocked. When you're talking to people, how successful has the narrative of ignore all of our troubles been? Or do the people in your district realize that a lot of people are still out of work? It's likely to get worse. People are still dying. Are they looking at John Carter and wondering why he's not doing more? Or are they ready to just move on and pretend that we're past all of this?
Nobody who is impacted from this, who doesn't know where their rent is coming from, who hasn't been able to go back to work, is wondering, how things are better. They are wondering, why isn't our government getting serious? Especially right now, this is fall. We have parents trying to decide, are they gonna homeschool their kids and do this distance learning, or are they gonna actually send their kids to school? Can you imagine being a parent right now and having to make that decision? And do you think as a parent, you would ever be able to live with yourself if you decided to send your kids to school and one of them died?
Oh my God, yeah.
So these are the challenges that every single family is having to deal with. On top of that, we now know that people in the lower income stratus are having to deal with evictions. Where are they gonna live? We just had, Laura go through all of the Southern Louisiana part. People didn't know where to go, where to take shelter. It's almost as if the GOP is looking at all of this and saying, just don't show this on camera, just don't show this in mass media and everything will be okay. They're not realizing the impact day to day that people are dealing with. These are major challenges for both people in my district and across the United States.
And obviously, while they're ignoring the economic catastrophe and the pandemic, they're talking nationally about the protests that have been going on. Their view of it is obviously very different than, say, mine, for instance. And so what's interesting is that while we're having this national conversation about possibly reforming the police, taking a look at the prison system and all of that, really fundamentally rethinking these things, apparently the person you're challenging has a sort of a dog in this fight, has been receiving money from some of these private prison groups, correct?
Yeah, so John Carter, who is my opponent and who has been in this position of representing Texas's 31st district for 9 terms, has taken money from the GEO Group and Core Civic. Now, Core Civic actually owns a detention center, an ICE detention center, in my district, in Taylor, Texas. We're talking about a women's detention center where there are allegations of sexual abuse and abuse of all kinds. He took money from both Core Civic and parent companies like GEO Group, and they just got, wait for this, a 10-year contract, renewed contract. And by the way, it's one thing that our politicians are taking money from corporate PACs or corporations, but it's another thing that they are being sold out by tiny amounts of money, as $5,000 and $30,000 and $35,000 for 10 year, tens of millions of dollars worth of contracts. Can you imagine that this detention center is in his district? These are people in his district. And it's like, you know, nobody knows about it, nobody cares about it. This is how our people are governing. What they don't have to pay attention to what we're going through. They have people giving them $5,000 and they're like, fine, great, I'm in good shape.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of Americans over the past few decades have sort of wised up to the idea that a lot of their politicians are bought, but I think that there might still be a little bit of naivete thinking that surely the sums of money have to be significant. The idea that you could, what a return on an investment, that you can turn a couple of thousand dollars into millions long term, and God only knows how long by the time it's fully done. Man, if we're gonna have corruption, couldn't they at least hold out for a little bit more money?
You would think, right? You would think that these people are sending them millions of dollars. It makes absolutely no sense. And think about it this way. Right now, throughout this pandemic, we had more than 55 million people file for unemployment, right? And during this exact same time, billionaires made hundreds of billions of dollars. Hundreds of billions of dollars. We're not talking about a billion here or there. We are talking about people in this country trying to figure out, where am I gonna live because I'm being evicted because I lost my job and I don't have enough money to pay. Talking about people trying to figure out, I don't have anyone to look after my children so I can go back to work. Yet we have billionaires in our country that make hundreds of billions of dollars. Something doesn't add up. This doesn't make sense. We cannot wait a single second for change to come. We have to come together, solve our own problems. And remember, just remember, in the HEROES Act, they took a $6,000 plus loan on every single man, woman, and child. That's you guys, that's us that work for a living, get up every single day in the morning and go work. And they distributed the majority of it to billionaires and major corporations that didn't need it to be able to stay alive or stay you know, solvent during this time.
Yeah, so look, obviously the stakes are very high in this race. You would imagine, I would hope, that the Democratic Party would be really taking advantage of this opportunity where the Republican Party has bungled so many simultaneous emergencies that they'd be making sure that in as many of these flippable races as possible, they're doing the right thing. And I know it's a priority for some. I know that you just did a live stream with both Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Yang as well. Are resources coming in? Are you getting the help needed to flip this thing? Are people taking it as seriously as they should?
Yeah, I mean, definitely people are waking up to the fact that out of the now 10 districts that are targeted in Texas, right? There were six in 2019. Texas's 31st district was one of them. Now there are 10 districts, but out of all the districts, the district that is most likely to flip blue and flip blue the biggest is our district. And you know why? I'll give you three reasons. Number one, more than 65,000 people moved into this district since 2018. In 2018, we just lost this race by 8,000 votes. These 65,000 people, on top of that, are young. They vote Democrat. They are highly educated because of the large tech, you know, businesses, Amazon, Google, Apple, Dell Technologies in Northwest Austin. They tend to be college educated, younger people, they vote Democrat. So out of all the districts, we have that major, you know, thing going for us. The second thing is MJ Hager, who ran in Texas's 31st district, is running for Senate. So out of all of Texas, the district that knows her the most is this district. She is most well known, has most name recognition in this district. And last but not the least, let me put it to you this way. Williamson County, which is in my district, flipped blue in 2018. It is the fastest growing county, not in Texas, in the entire country by percentage. But we need to close the gap in Bell County. And what people believe about Bell County is because it is a military, you know, there's a military base there, right? World's, you know, the country's largest armored vehicle military base in this entire country. But what they don't know, and here's the secret, it is a majority minority district. Majority of the people in Bell County are Black Americans, Latino Americans, and Asian Americans. And our campaign, the reason that we beat out 11 other candidates, including candidates who had ran for office district-wide and elected officials, is because we, for the first time, are talking about the challenges that people who have been left behind, being completely ignored by John Carter, Mm-hmm. We are bringing them into this political process. We are addressing their problems with actual solutions that will help them. And that's what's got people excited in my district. So if you want to turn Texas blue, our district is going to be the district that is going to contribute the most number of blue votes that you can imagine at the entire statewide level. But we still need your help. Remember, out of all the people running, I'm a first-time candidate. Multiple candidates have ran before in 2018. So they've been running for 3.5 years, whereas I'm a first-time candidate. So I need all the help I can get. I need you guys to call, you know, your rich friends, your rich uncles, and your grandma, and ask them to donate whatever they can, $10, $5, $25. Look, my opponent already had $1 million of cash on hand at the end of June. We have to catch up. But I'll guarantee you this. We are running one of the most efficient campaigns, the best ROI on your money. And we're not just going to flip this district. We're going to flip it so big so the GOP gets the message loud and clear that any party that is responsible for the death of 177,000 Americans should never, never be allowed to come back in power ever again.
Yeah. That's powerful. You know, I always forget that you're a first-time candidate. I feel like we've been talking for years at this point. But anyway, and you're 100% right. It, obviously flippable, great statistics there. And if, like, I know that you were talking to the audience to some extent, but I hope that the DNC and, you know, and the Democratic Party at large takes notice, because if, like, Beto O'Rourke came within just a couple of points of winning a statewide election just a couple of years ago. Biden is polling within a few points of Trump in Texas. And if enough money is put in into districts like yours and gets enough people out there, if Biden wins Texas, there's no election. There's no worry about the Electoral College at that point. And so I hope that they hear the message and they take it seriously. I know that you told people, you know, obviously you'd like their support. Where can they go specifically to provide that?
So it's votefordonna.com, and you can go there and donate, or you can go to votefordonna.com/give if you want to read a little bit more about my background and the race statistics, if that's what, you know, is interesting to you. But I'll tell you this, I have made this promise on the Beto O'Rourke event that we did. If we raise $1 million, this race is won. I made this promise, you're gonna, guys gonna hold me to it, so help me get there. By the way, Texas's early voting has been moved up to October 13th, and anyone 65 and older in Texas can vote by mail. Those mail-in ballots are going out late September. We need your help now. If we can spend the money in September, we've got this.
Donna, as always, thank you for joining us, and best of luck to you. Hopefully we'll talk again before the big day, but best of luck on the path.
Thank you so much, John, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.